So, Tyler Bryden here, June 22nd, 2018. I've got a lot of screens around me. That's why my eyes are always darting. I almost think this is bad video etiquette, but I love my screens too much, and I'm also looking at some stuff and want to pull it out for you. I'm continuing this habit of trying to do just sort of some video content in a place that I'm comfortable with and want to share that content with you guys. I've been doing this through both video, obviously recording here, but also been sending this out through audio. And so big, exciting, you know, moment for old Tyler here. Tyler Talks. I don't know if that's going to be the name that stays, but I just wanted to set this up. When I first looked at setting up this whole process and system, I thought it was going to be much more difficult than it actually turned out to be. And I think that's why I was so hesitant for a while. But I'm going to explain this in some blog posts, but really all I did, I've got my WordPress site, got a WordPress plugin as well too. That generates an RSS feed. With that RSS feed, every time I put a new podcast, or basically what is a blog post if you've used WordPress before, it automatically populates that RSS feed. iTunes is basically crawling that periodically, maybe once a day. And if new content is uploaded, then it actually populates right here on iTunes. So exciting times, it's there, it's up, you can listen to it. It's even got a couple popularity bars, if you didn't notice. I think I had like 4 or 5 listens, so that's some very low popularity, but there is some bars there, and I appreciate you hyping me up, iTunes. But I did have something I really wanted to talk about today, and that is something that many people are excited about here in Canada. Marijuana is to be legal. October 17th, Trudeau confirms. This is taking a little bit longer than I think we originally thought, but that seems to be the way it goes with all politics. And so I don't think anyone's too upset. We're excited to see this. It's a landmark moment for, I believe, the world and how we perceive recreational marijuana and recreational drugs. And that's what I wanted to talk about today, legalization of marijuana here in Canada, but also what does the future of drugs look like? And this might be something that seems cut and dry for most people. We might start making slow incremental movements towards legalizing marijuana. But what other drugs will be legalized? What are we looking at across the world? What are we seeing? And how is this going to shift over the next couple years or next couple decades? And I wanted to share a couple studies and things and trends that we're seeing that to me really signals, again, a shift in how we perceive drugs, and actually moving them more towards what we believe is now medicine, and really seeing some serious success on some use cases here. So I want to talk about that. First, of course, I did want to talk about the legalization. Trudeau, he did it. This was a big campaign promise. I think a lot of people voted for him, honestly, based on this. He had two big promises, was this and electoral reform. Didn't get the electoral reform, but we've got the marijuana. It's exciting times. Now, the big question here is, how does this roll out? We are only the second country in the world to actually legalize marijuana federally, first in the G7, and so there's not too many precedents set for how this is going to happen. And we've sort of seen a debate. Obviously, there's the public sector, and when we first sort of started talking and making that shift towards legalization, Kathleen Wynne was our premier liberal in charge of the of how this was going to set up. And so federal law, but there's some province roles in how this works. We were looking at, the public sector actually rolling this out, similar to the LCBO. They had what now called the Ontario Cannabis Store, which has some four provincially run cannabis stores have been announced. I don't believe they're open yet, but they're starting to put these zones in and try to figure out, where are these buildings going to go? How does it actually work? And what's this going to look like? Now, a lot of people, I think, are relatively upset about it going public. I think it makes sense. Obviously, they're trying to get their tax dollars. This is why there's been a big push in this in at least some regards. We've seen the success of Colorado. We've seen the success of California. They have made a ton of money off the legalization of marijuana and running it through them. Tax revenues in the billions for both. And And obviously our government wants a piece of that. So Kathleen Wynne with public sector, more control, centralized distribution, and that's a problem for some people. And I think, you know, what we're seeing here is that there's a lot of people who have been involved in the marijuana industry for a long time, even in its infancy and in the legal black market, who know their stuff and really operated in a legal place, but should have the potential and the opportunity, and many people believe this, that they should have that opportunity to contribute to a private sector and actually take their knowledge and everything they know and make some money off that. And that's, you know, in a stark contrast to what we might see at these Ontario cannabis stores, where these people might not have even smoked marijuana in their life. They could be like LCBO employees who don't know anything. People who like marijuana and people who are even first coming across marijuana, you want to have someone that knows what they're talking about, knows the effects of different strains. All these things are really important. And of course, I sort of call these the big bud tenders, right? And that's where I think a lot of people want to see this go. The people who have known marijuana, who have been involved with it for a long time, actually having an opportunity to share that knowledge, share the passion that they have for it as it becomes legal. But really, I don't know if that's going to happen. And we've seen here in London, Ontario, where I am, there has been, you know, numerous stores popping up. I think we've got a couple right now that are actually running, but also many of them have been shut down as they've tried to do this process. Of course, it was before it was legal, but it's a really difficult sell for the government. They want to keep this in a pretty stringent supply chain. Don't want kids accessing it. All these problems, right? Like all these things we hear. We've seen a little bit of loosening of this with alcohol and grocery stores, but it's still a long way before I think we see a privatized sector like that. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but the big piece here that everyone is very aware of is that if this doesn't roll out the way people want it to, if it goes public sector, if the costs are too high, if it's annoying to get, there are distribution systems in place. Weed has been illegal, but a lot of people are smoking it. If the price isn't there, if it's not competitive, then it's not going to change. The black market is still going to thrive, and it's going to be not as successful as I believe they hope it's going to be. So we're going to really have to see how it plays out. All of this stuff has a lot of moving parts. We are, again, one of the first people setting up this system. Uruguay has had some success. We want to make sure we're doing it right. And, you know, way we might roll this out may be, and at some point, the blueprint for how other countries are going to do this. Now, that's sort of my little thought on the actual legalization part. Again, what I wanted to touch on was just, I think, how much of a watershed moment this is for drugs, for recreational therapy, or for recreational use, recreational therapy. And I really want to explore this. And so what I wanted to look was at the future of drugs. So we've now seen legalization in Canada through marijuana, or at least it's coming here in October. But what does that future look like? And what we've seen, especially lately, are some really interesting trends in drugs for therapeutic use. And so this is MAPS, Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. They have been around for quite a long time, and I don't think I have everything on them here, but they are looking at ways that other very marginalized drugs can have a positive impact on people's mental health, on their quality of life. And we have seen some big things that have been done through this, and some, you know, massive success around trauma, around addiction, around end of life, people with terminal diseases, the way that MDMA, psilocybin, and LSD, and I think there's, you know, a ton of other ones that I don't even know, ibogaine. There's obviously ayahuasca, which is a plant form, which includes DMT, and all these different, like, natural variations. They have chemical variations that they've made as well too, that they're actually using to treat clients, guide them through, you know, usually set them up with a little bit of cognitive behavior therapy, tell them what to expect, and then guide them through a use case with this. So they'll actually help them, you know, dose them properly. They'll take the dose, and then the doctor or the psychiatrist, who's ever running these clinics, is guiding them through that journey. And they've got, you know, a flight trip, all these, flight list for what you're supposed to do when you're tripping, and if there's, you know, if there's something bad and dark in it, to move towards it instead of moving away. All these little things and lessons that have been learned over time. But what we've seen here, I actually wanted to pull this as well up too, is a shift in the credibility of this. This is a book written by Michael Pollan. Michael Pollan is a credible journalist, a New York Times bestseller, and he started to hear these murmurs and whispers about the use of psychedelics to help solve mental illness. And these trials were going on at Johns Hopkins, and a paper was released, I believe 2006, 2007, that really saw amazing results, like 80% effectiveness compared to, you know, like 1% for SSRIs, meaning, the traditional pills that people take when they have depression or have a mental illness. When you compare 80% success to 1%, it's dramatic. It was something that Michael, I think, read. It piqued his interest in something that he needed to explore. And so what he actually did, I actually listened to this book, and I think I've got the last hour. I heard him on Joe Rogan, and then I downloaded this book because I was so interested in what he was talking about. And he actually went and wrote the book and then also recorded the audiobook. So it's his voice, which is great. He's got a great voice. I listened to this whole thing, and he did a really thorough job. He went back from the history of psychedelics and discovery of LSD to the Timothy O'Leary, clinical trials, which caused a ton of problems and really brought on the drug war and Nixon and everything that stopped the progress of psychedelics and how they could be used for therapeutic use, and all the way up to today and what we're seeing, what we're exploring, the results. And it's really an exciting time for anyone who is interested in seeing how these forms of therapeutic treatment differ from the traditional means that we're usually seeing, that are largely, almost majority, not effective. And we're continuing to see treatment-resistant depression. I think there's a lot of misdiagnosis. I think people are not seeing the results that they want with these SSRIs, with these antidepressants. And so we're in a state of chaos for our mental health system, for the way that we treat mental health. And until we start exploring some opportunities, ones like this, I think we're going to be in a trouble, and we're not really getting to the root of the problem, which is what they've seen to see, like what they've come to see throughout these trials and through these tests. You can see here in Vancouver where these trials are now being, now that there's some credibility behind this stuff, it's much easier for them to get approved for studies to actually do these trials. Here was an MDMA-assisted psychotherapy trial in a final phase in Vancouver. We've obviously seen the psilocybin mushrooms again, but the LSD and then the MDMA and the other couples I mentioned. And we've seen this, we're starting to see this in mass media, these videos of people who are, taking a CBD oil and actually their kids aren't having seizures anymore. All these amazing things, and yet the stigma around mental health or around drugs, around mental health because of drugs is still there. And it's decreasing. Here in London we have, we're at least trying to get there with clinics where people can take drugs safely, and this is more for needles and injections. But the stigma is decreasing, but it's definitely still there. And so for Canada to be at the forefront of this, to set an example that we get it. There's rhetoric, there's talk, there's this war against drugs has had its impact. It's stopped research into this stuff. It's really, I think, caused problems for a lot of people who, feel shame about using these kind of drugs, any of this kind of stuff. It's just caused a lot of societal problems. And so to be in a country that's contributing to what I'm hoping is a better future that looks at all the methods for how we can treat mental illness, treat trauma, treat vets coming back from war, treat people who have cancer and know they're dying and having existential crises because of it. This is all very important stuff. And I know from my own experience, even me making this video, I get very nervous about making this video. I've had experiences with marijuana, with psychedelics, including psilocybin mushrooms. And And that scares me to talk about this stuff because there's a stigma, there's a shame associated with it. I don't know if people think that I can run a business just because I'm interested in this stuff and have had those experiences in the past, and hope to have some of those experiences and teaching moments in the future as well too. And that's a shame, because I think there's a lot of people missing out on some serious opportunities to explore themselves, to learn some things about themselves that they didn't know about the world. And what they often talk about, which that comes out of the, you know, out of these therapy sessions and out of use in general, all this noetic quality, this things that we just know is true deep down to our core, and that sometimes we have to uncover. And often this uncovering happens while on a psychedelic, while on MDMA, and creating basically a mystical moment, a spiritual connection that can really shift people. And we've seen it over and over again. As the research continues, I think we're only going to continue to see this. And to me, to look back and see that, you know, in the 70s, we were seeing the same success with this kind of stuff. And just because a couple people didn't like it, they didn't like that it made people question authority, the people who were doing it didn't want to go to war, and that they were preaching love and not hate and crime. That took us away from years of research and data, and just, I think, a mentally healthier world that might not be in the sort of the predicament and the situation that it's in right now. And of course, there's some over-optimism about marijuana, about psychedelics, and just this kind of treatments in general. There always has been, and I think there will continue to be in that regards too. But if we can look at this from a scientific, practical place and see that there is the opportunity for some serious success here, I'm hoping that we can all get on that same page. And I think Canada doing this as a country that a lot of people respect and admire, it's making a statement, and it's a statement that I, as a Canadian, am proud to make. And I, as someone who's struggled with mental health, know is a big step that we're taking. So I don't think I have too much else to say today. That's a good enough rant, 17 minutes about drugs and the future of drugs, probably going to get me in enough trouble already. So I'm going to shut it down here today. But if you're interested in this stuff, let me know, shoot me a message, because I think this is just really fascinating. I'm continuing to explore this myself, both on seeing how it has applications therapeutically and what's going on in the science world on it, but just also on the cultural side as well too. And we've seen some amazing cultural moments, music, art created out of this stuff. And I think that combination of both, you know, science-based, but also the, you know, the spiritual, the mystic base that we see, almost, you know, shamanism and science mixed together, can have some profound impacts on our society. So I'm out of here. Hope you guys have a great weekend. I look forward to hopefully coming back for week 4 here, and continuing this habit of creating some content, and I'm hoping you guys like it. So thank you very much. Have a great weekend.